Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal, simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal, only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Goosebumps episode 8, You Can't Scare Me, is over, but we're just getting started. I am your very scared host, who is plenty able to be scared by this episode and others in this series. But I am here with my co-host, who isn't afraid of anything, the king of Halloween, who has watched, what is it, over 170 movies in the month of October? We'll get into it. I'm here with Todd.
Yeah, 176 horror movies is how many I watched. What's funny is I thought I was at 174. I'm like, okay, I have to pick a short one to watch one more to get up to 175 before the end of the night last night. And then I realized I left one off. So I actually got myself up to 176, which was not my goal. My goal was to hit 175. It's just like, it sounds better than 174. But yeah, I watched a lot of horror movies in October.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I'm just going to like do some real quick math here. So that's, you watched over 5 movies a day.
On average, yes.
Yeah. That is, first of all, just like flatly impressive. The fact that, walk me through this. I think people listening to this podcast will be interested, having had your horror recommendations this whole time. Like, how many of them were new to you versus rewatches? And then what was the overall like impression of quality here?
Yeah, so the majority were new. Try to watch as many new things as I can. Now, the quality on a lot of those is pretty low because I've watched most of the high quality horror movies out there. But there are several like brand new movies that came out that I just hadn't had a chance to see yet. And there's also lots of things that dropped during October. Like I subscribe to the horror to the streaming service Shudder, which is strictly horror movie and horror-related stuff. So Shudder always drops a whole bunch of new horror movies. There's also a service called Screambox that drops some new stuff. So there is like some new stuff out there. But yeah, it's mostly new stuff with some old favorites. Every year I do a horror movie watching challenge called Hooptober. named after Tobe Hooper, the director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Poltergeist, Life Force, a few other not as well known horror movies. But so basically the Hooptober Challenge is something that I've started doing there. I first joined Letterboxd several years ago, and it gives you some criteria, and the criteria change every year, but it gives me a nice structure for initially going, okay, here, like, I need to watch three movies that feature the devil in them. I need to watch one movie featuring Robert Englund. I need to watch one movie from this director, one movie from this director. So that gives me a little bit of structure. But then after that, it's just kind of like a free for all, like, what am I in the mood for? And I go to Letterboxd, find lists of movies, and then just go, okay, let me go through this list of every slasher movie ever. And which ones have I not seen that sound interesting that I can watch without having to pay anything extra for them? So that's a lot of it. I also went to a horror movie marathon. I'm actually wearing the t-shirt right now. Dismember the Alamo. It's a annual horror movie marathon at the Alamo Draft House. It's a mystery horror movie marathon where we don't know what we're watching until the credits actually start. So every year it's like a complete surprise what movies they're going to be showing us. And this year, out of the five movies they showed us, I'd only seen two of them before. So because they like to, at the one in Richardson, Texas, they like to show very obscure, very bizarre horror movies. So there's always a good chance that there's something that I haven't seen just because it's not available anywhere else. So yeah.
It's truly shocking to me that there are like this many horror movies in existence that you haven't seen at this point. And the fact that it's not like you don't watch horror the rest of the year to like up for October. Like, I know you're watching horror movies at other times of the year. I understand that like a lot of horror movies will come out specifically in October, but still, like, they do come out other times of the year and you watch them then. So it's just, it's very impressive that there are that many. And I really think you need to tell the story of the last movie at that marathon, because I find it delightful. And I know that you are not happy about it.
Yeah. So as I said, I've been going to this Member the Alamo marathon since its inception. This was the 9th year that they've done it. It was supposed to be the 10th year, but of course there was no marathon in 2020. The marathon often has themes, not every year, but starting the third year, they started doing themes. And the themes would be things like, okay, all the movies are going to show this time are horror movies that are based around technology. Or this year, they're all going to be based on creepy crawly things like snakes and bugs and stuff like that. And one year, the theme was sequels. And this year was 2017. And a horror movie sequel came out that year, a horror comedy sequel came out that year, that they decided to try to prank us by saying, oh, this movie is what we're going to show. And they even held up a poster of this movie, and no one in the theater wanted to see this movie. And we were all thankful when it turned out it was just a prank. Then turns out that whenever they had reached out to the studio to say, hey, can we get a poster for this movie, for this horror movie thing, not letting them know it's for a joke. And the studio was like, oh, sure. And sent them boxes and boxes and boxes of posters for this movie. So this was in 2017. So for the next 6 years, they have been trying to give away posters to this movie at like every event that they've done. This one of the guys has just like had these boxes of posters for this movie in his house. Last year, they actually pranked us by playing the first couple of minutes of the movie before running out. Oh, no, we're just, wrong movie, ha, 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 ha. This year, they got down to the final poster. They finally gave away every poster except for the last one. After 6 years, they got rid of hundreds of posters for this movie. And so before they filmed the last movie, or before they showed the last movie, they had a little trivia contest, and the winner got the framed poster. And then, like, you know, we finally given away the last poster. This has been like a nice running gag for several years, but I feel like now we need to pay it off. So we're watching the movie. And that is how I watched Boo 2, A Madea Halloween. I had never seen a Madea movie before. I hope to never see a Madea movie again. It was one of the worst theater going experiences I've ever had in my entire life. I appreciate the bit. As we all know around here, you know, I'm good friends with Adam H. I have gotten used to people being committed to the bit. I love good commitment to the bit. I can appreciate the bit, but I also will never forgive them for making me sit through Boo 2, A Madea Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, the post-show recaps Discord is just like full of bits at all times, and a lot of us are big fans of bits, and it's so you described this to me and it was, I thought it was absolutely hilarious. But I, the even better part is how much you were like not happy having to watch this movie. As someone who had watched 175 other movies this month, like they can't all be great quality, but this one stood out above the rest in terms of bad quality.
It did. And I will say, I watched some really abysmal horror movies. But this one was for me the worst one of them all. It's not my brand of comedy, and it just feels very amateurishly made, and it just, every scene went on just like five beats too long, and I didn't pick it. I think that also like factors into it. Like some of these like other horrible horror movies I watch, I pick them because I like, okay, this sounds stupid. I think my biggest problem is this feel like a movie that had some budget behind it, and just it should have been better. But yeah. So yeah, that was my fun experience. The rest of the marathon was great. So yeah, but October's over, so now I can finally start watching all the things I've just piled up that I haven't been watching. So all the TV shows I haven't been watching, they've just been letting them pile up, waiting for October to be over. That's the real secret to how I can watch so many horror movies. I just watch almost nothing else. Almost everything else like falls by the wayside.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know, like, give us like really quick a couple highlights of what you watch. What are the things that you watch that you would recommend to people who are watching the show because they like horror movies?
So some of the best movies I saw, there's a movie that came out several years ago from Joko Anwar called Satan's Slaves. And so the sequel came out this year, Satan's Slaves to Communion. It's really, really creepy. Just like really well done, kind of like haunted, haunted apartment building story this time around. It was like really well done. I think it lives up to the first one, which I liked a lot. There's also a found footage series called Hell House LLC. I'm not a big found footage horror fan, but the first Hell House LLC was a really, really well done found footage film. Probably my favorite found footage film. The next couple sequels were not that good, but this year a fourth film came out, Hell House LC Origins. And I'm blanking on the subtitle of it. It's like the McAllister House, something along those lines. It's available on Shudder right now. It was excellent. It took the creepiest thing that was in the first Hell House LLC, which were clown mannequins, and built basically the entire thing around clown mannequins. Yeah, Melissa, for those like not watching the video, Melissa just shaking her head immediately.
No.
Then there's this horror comedy called Benny Loves You about a guy who throws away his childhood toy and it's not happy about it, and it comes back for revenge. Very, very over the top comedy, very, very gory, but also really funny, also really stupid, but purposefully so. So those are some of the ones that I enjoyed, like in terms of like new to me movies.
Amazing. Cool. Well, thank you, Todd. I think this is so great. It is sort of funny that we are like still covering this show now into November with a couple episodes, but I think that it's been very fun to like, this has been my taste of horror in October, and it's been like a pretty good level for me. I've been pretty pleased. This episode, there were definitely some bits that I was like not super keen on. I think Slappy is just not my jam, but that's fine. I'm excited, so let's get into it. Let's talk about the episode.
All right, so season one, episode 8 is entitled You Can't Scare Me. And before we go any further, I do have to mention something about the episode. So after almost every episode this season, I've left the episode with a song stuck in my head, like Unholy or Off the Head or Blow Up for Butterfly Wings. And that happened to me here, but not from any song that was actually in the episode, but song that the title reminded me of. So the title, You Can't Scare Me, made me think of a song from season one of Schmigadoon called You Can't Tame Me. And so I just had in my head constantly, you can't scare me with math Worms are slappy. Now you all know I grew up with horror. There's no genre that I've seen more. You can trust that unlike poor Nora, you can't scare me. So that's just something in my head like for the last several days. So I just had to get that out here. So
yeah. Just so casually with the lyric. And for people might not know this about you, Todd. Todd is a very master parody lyricist. He's done a lot of really great, and like just actual lyricist, has done a lot of really great stuff with various projects through the PSR. Space. So yeah, that what a gem to just like sprinkle into the podcast. That's so incredible. For me, it's Sweet Dreams, which we will get to. But yes.
Yeah. So anyway, the actual episode itself. So we open on the gang falling down through the floor into the scrap search version of like the school science classroom. Then in the real world, we see Nathan and Harold fighting for control of his body, trying to get to the scrapbook. Back inside the scrapbook, the gang all begin to make some "we're about to die" confessions. But before Isaiah can get his out to Margo, they fall yet again, this time into a version of Biddle's basement, where they meet the ghosts of Harold's parents, who say they're waiting for him so they can move on together. Nathan manages to draw a rudimentary door for the gang to escape through, as his father gives them a message to pass on to Harold, tell him we forgive him and he'll always be our hair bear. Harold regains full control of the body, and Nathan rejoices that the kids escaped.
Yeah, I don't even know what's going on. I took shockingly few notes this episode, and I think it was like there was a lot of like, okay, this is like, I will talk about this, but this episode feels like a finale. It's very strange that like there's still two episodes left of the show. And it feels like that was by design. Like it's sort of meant to be like a fake out finale. And people will be like, oh yeah, this 8-episode Goosebumps season be like at the end of October. And then it's like, wait, there's two more episodes left. Like, I don't really understand why that's the strategy they've gone with, but it definitely feels like it. But yeah, anyway, we've got all this back and forth. It was interesting because I was thinking about our predictions at the end of last episode, how we wanted them to like get out of the book fairly quickly. And like, we weren't totally sure, but I do think that this was like a decent middle ground of what we were asking for, right? It wasn't just like they were immediately washed out. He still did have to do like one more thing, but it also didn't drag too long. So I was pretty pleased about that. I thought that we had sort of talked about that. We didn't want it to last forever, but them immediately just getting out also felt like maybe not. Right. So this did hit that sweet spot for me.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted it to feel earned. That wasn't just like, oh, Harold accidentally freed them or anything like that. Or, oh, no, we're going to send like half the episode with them doing that while Nora's running for her life or whatever. So, yeah, I agree. This was a hit the very nice length of time. And you know, Nathan actually had to struggle to get them out. And then they also got a key piece of information, though, inside the scrapbook that helped them stop everything. So it felt like it wasn't just like, oh, danger for danger's sake. It actually served a purpose of having them run into the ghosts of Harold's parents that were apparently living inside his head, which is okay. I'll buy it. It's unusual, but you know, I'm down with that. But yeah, it served some purposes other than just a cliffhanger, which I appreciated.
For sure.
I have been critical of Justin Long's physical acting of his like fighting with himself in previous episodes, but I really enjoyed this sequence. I really enjoyed this sequence of him like the hand clamping onto the car door and him fighting with that, him biting his own hand and then his hand grabbing him by the hair and everything like that. His hand trying to stab himself, with the pen and all. I thought that he did a really good job with that, rolling around on the ground as some guy leaves the store and just kind of stares at him and quickly gets in his own vehicle to drive away without stopping to check what's going on. I thought that the comedy of that worked a lot better in this instance than like the earlier instances of him fighting with his body.
That's good. I was still a little bit like, okay. But yeah, it was pretty funny. That one guy was like, I don't know what's going on, but I don't want to be here anymore. He like gets in his truck.
So then we see snow is accumulating on the roads and Nora is driving up to her cabin and she gets there and she starts gearing up to bury Slappy and a police officer shows up at her door to let her know that weather conditions are worsening and they're on the verge of closing down the roads. He notices a duffel bag and asks if there's a body in it. Nora dumps Slappy's parts out to prove that it's not. The cop apologizes and heads off, at which point Slappy says, I thought he would never leave.
Yeah, already. Gosh, I don't. Yeah. Anyway, this stuff is all filmed in Whistler, which is like a pretty popular, famous like ski hill. That's about, I'd say like an hour, 45 minutes to an hour outside of Vancouver. So it was funny because I was like looking at all of this. I was like, where are you right now? You are definitely somewhere very specific for there to be this much snow when I know you're filmed around Vancouver. And so, yeah, sure enough, they like figured all of that out, which I thought was good. Also, I think I have figured out the location of Nora's shop as being in Deep Cove, which is very exciting. So because it's a very beautiful spot and that totally tracks. Deep Cove is a very beautiful location just outside of Vancouver. Also, the high school that this show is filmed at is filmed in my hometown, which is a suburb about 45 minutes outside of Vancouver. It's at one of the schools there. So not my personal school, high school, but one of the other high schools in my hometown, which is also very fun. So, yeah, anyway, that was all I was thinking of on this drive where I was like, I've definitely driven that road. I don't know which road that is, but I've absolutely driven it in those conditions.
Wow. So I do want to mention one thing that we haven't really mentioned before, which is the voice of Slappy is done by the actor Chris Gere, who has been in quite a few things, but the main thing that I know him from is from You're the Worst, which was an amazing sitcom, and he played like one of the main characters in that. And I didn't recognize his voice in this, but I looked it up and like, oh, Chris Gere. So I just wanted to shout out because I think he does a really good job as the creepy Slappy in this.
Yeah, his voice is very creepy.
Yeah. So we then cut to Biddlebrat driving, and he reaches the safety checkpoint manned by the same officer that was just at Norris Cabin. And the officer helpfully tells him exactly where Norris Cabin is, but also refuses to let him pass without chains on his tires. A frustrated Biddlebrat turns the car around and heads back down the road. Meanwhile, the gang is speeding down the snow-covered highway as Lucas worries about his mom. And let me just say, officer, no. You do not give this strange man, you know, directions to a cabin where you saw a single woman. You know, that, no, bad.
Yeah, that was awful and very stupid. I have to ask you, Todd, what's your experience driving in the snow?
I have some experience, not a ton, but I have some. Largely I have experience because whenever I worked at Oklahoma State University, they never shut down for bad weather, but the town infrastructure was not also well suited for snowy weather, so there wasn't, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, stuff put in place. So yeah, there are a few times I skidded through some stop signs on my way to and from work, and my apartment complex is at the top of this hill, and I was going up and someone stopped in front of me, and then I had to back all the way down the hill because once I stopped I could not keep moving forward. I had to go back down the hill and then try to get some, you know, momentum to get up it. Oh, so yeah, I've driven on snow and ice a little bit, but since I moved to Texas, not as much. In fact, the first time that there was like snow after I had moved down here, the university I work at now closed down. I got a call saying, hey, we're closed down for snow. I'm like, oh, this is great. You know, OSU never closed down for snow. And then I don't have any groceries. I actually had to like brave the weather to go get something. I go out and there was nothing on the road. There was like nothing. It's like, okay, there was like, you know, snowflakes in the sky, and they like, oh, we got to shut down because people down here do not know how to drive on snow and ice. And also there is even less infrastructure for snow and ice here than there was in Northeast Oklahoma or Central Oklahoma. So.
Yeah, we struggle with it on the West Coast because we don't get it anywhere near as bad as the rest of the country. Absolutely. And so, yeah, we like similarly don't fund it properly for the basically like one really good snowfall we tend to get per year. Last winter was pretty good. I think we got a couple. I was like driving home from Seattle as it was snowing, and it got to the point that you like couldn't see. It was all like fresh, so you couldn't see the lanes on the highway. So you were just sort of like following the vehicle in front of you, being like, I don't know, we're like somewhere in on the road where we're supposed to be. But I like, there's a like, major highways, like the one out to Whistler, you just like wouldn't drive on without like proper snow tires and chains when there's like that much snow on the ground. Although I gotta say, when he's talking about how much snow is coming, the amount of scenes that they filmed where there was like zero snow falling, I was like, the presence of snow in this episode is very inconsistent. It's always on the ground, but whether or not it is actively coming down, like you don't close the road because it might snow in the future. Like that doesn't make any sense. You close the road if it's like, hey, the snow has happened and the plows haven't got here yet. And it's like unsafe. I don't know. Anyway, that was very silly. I didn't understand what that whole bit was. But I appreciated it. Also, yeah, just, I sort of mentioned it, but this funky, like, I can't remember exactly what scene it is. I just like wrote the note down about the funky, like sweet dreams thing that was music that was happening in the background. It was very, very creepy, but also very, very cool. I really loved it.
Yeah, it played a few times through the episode. I think it played if Nish never Nora was, we first see Nora driving to the cabin. And then it plays a little bit later during the cat and mouse in the woods. Yeah, it felt a little bit like the Marilyn Manson cover of Sweet Dreams, but I don't know if it was, but it felt like that very similar because we didn't really get a lot of lyrics of it. It was like mainly we got the instrumental more than anything else. But I really liked that. I thought it added a lot to the episode. The one thing I want to say about the scene with the kids driving behind them is James asking, so how many cocoa packets do you think Biddle's gone through? So I appreciate James always trying to like bring the levity into a scene.
Yeah, I also appreciate the idea that James is driving a vehicle with some level of ground clearance as opposed to like Biddle's car that absolutely could not handle those road conditions. The Jeep I'm much less concerned about.
Yeah, I do like that at first James is driving like a reasonable speed, and then after realizing how freaked out Lucas is, it's like, oh yeah, do I have permission to drive faster than I promised my mom I ever would? And they're like, yeah. So then he like guns it, so...
Yeah, yeah, although not in the snow, buddy. That's not, no. You do have to drive slower in the snow. Like, not a snow, you know, not as bad as some people think you have to. But, like, now is not the time to be, like, breaking your mom's rules. But fine, I get it. Lucas is freaking out.
Yeah. So, back in the cabin, Slappy is trying to convince Nora he just wants to help her. And she slaps duct tape over his mouth in response and says she's going to bury him where nobody will ever find him. Biddle Brat pulls over the side of the road and heads through snow on foot towards the cabin. Then we have the scene of Margo and Isaiah having a text conversation about what he almost said, and they discuss whether Lucas and Margo are dating, while Isabella is stuck in between them and kind of calls them on it, and they both deny it. Then Lucas spots Brat's car on the side of the road, and James sees Biddle Brat's footprints. Margo, Lucas, and Isaiah all head off after him while James and Isabel stay by the road in case Nora or Biddle Brat come back that way. And one thing that we both realized after the end of last episode that we forgot to talk about was there was a scene in last episode after they rescue Isabella. She kind of falls into Isaiah's arms, and there's this little bit of a moment of maybe something between them and Margo kind of looking kind of jealously at them and everything like that. So, which seemed to come out of nowhere. The whole Isabella Isaiah thing seemed to kind of come out of nowhere to me. But it definitely is a thing that happened. I meant to mention it last time, then I completely forgot. And I mentioned to you afterwards, you're like, oh, I meant to do this too. So, and it kind of starts to rear its head here, and we'll see it more in a later scene, but you can just see they're just sitting there texting back and forth and then looking at each other after they send texts. And Isabella's just stuck between them, looking back and forth between them with this look of like, are you kidding me? On her face. It's very silly, but I kind of enjoyed the Isabella of it all, at least.
Yeah, I just sort of wish that it had been somewhat seated a little bit more, like at least on Isabella's side. Like, I don't know. I get that he like sort of has this moment where she like comes back. He's like, that was really cool. Like, whatever. And so fine. Maybe he's been like really hung up on Margo. Margo's now looking at Lucas. So, you know, maybe he's like accepting that and whatever, fine. Isabella's also here and also cute, so okay. But yeah, with Isabella, this just, again, like sort of seemed to come out of nowhere. And I was like, I think it would have been so easy for them to seed, like, we know that the troll was like picking on Allison, but it was sort of, like at one point she says like, oh, I'm sorry for like trolling all of you. Like, it sort of seems like, I don't know if she was picking on all of them, but it could have so easily been a comment of like, Allison said early on to something to Isaiah, like, oh yeah, like the troll never says anything about you or whatever. Like, I think that there could have been something there that could have hinted at this building up, but I don't know. Yeah, it's sort of coming out of nowhere and fine, whatever. I'm also very down for like this if it ends up happening, but this like weird sort of like four-way thing, I don't know. They need to figure it out, but they've only got two episodes to do it, so I don't think it's going to get much focus.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely agree that they should have seeded it much earlier, especially because the only thing that we see, like the interaction between the two of them in the first episode, is her being annoyed at him for dropping the mic and then not knowing her name. So yeah, up until last episode, I don't know if there was ever anything that showed that she really had any feelings for it. She couldn't stand Allison. That was very clear.
Yeah.
But was that because she liked him and so she disliked Allison even more because she liked, I don't know. So it felt, you know, feels a little bit out of the blue, but it's something that did get set up last episode and we'll get a little bit more focus in this one. So yeah, next we go to see Nora exiting the cabin to bury Slappy, and then she sees Biddle Brat. She makes it to her car, but he breaks through the window and grabs her. She slams the car into reverse and throws him off, but also incapacitates the vehicle. Then she takes off running as he limps after her through the snow.
Yeah, this part was all freaky. This is the same kind of stuff where like the guy in the woods, right? Where it's like, this is like scary because it's like, actually
happen.
Yeah. But also, woman, you need to get a more reliable car. I don't understand what happened to this car that she like, it started and then it didn't want to start again. I was like, didn't this car just start for you? I don't understand. You need a new battery, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not like, so she kind of like ran into a snowbank, but she didn't like total the car. She didn't like ram the front of the car into it even. So it was just like a really strange, I mean, there was a little bit of an impact, but it doesn't seem like it would have been enough to, but she also had trouble starting the car before that as well. So.
Yeah, right. But I was like, why did the car turn off? Like, why is the car not just still on? Like, it's not like she turned it off and then it can't, like, every time it turns on, it's like hard to turn on. It's like, shouldn't the car still be on? I don't understand why she has to turn the car on again.
Yeah, I don't know. A very much horror movie convenience moment there. I agree. But I will say that I think that Justin Long does a really good job of being menacing and creepy
in this episode. He does.
I think this is what I was wanting for more of the entire time. I wanted like menacing, creepy Biddle Brat, not kind of goofy Biddle Brat. I didn't really care for goofy Biddle Brat, but menacing, creepy Biddle Brat works really well. He does a really good job of it. The whole scene where he's like banging on the window and yelling at her, just he does a fantastic job. And this is what I wanted more of. So I'm glad that we got to see quite a bit of it in this episode before the whole Biddle Brat situation like resolves itself. But I think that he did a really great job of, like I said, like being very menacing, and just that shot of him like going after her, like limping after her as she's like running away and just very determinedly limping after her, which is like really effective.
Yeah, he's creepy.
Yeah. So hopefully the commercial you're getting ready to listen to won't be creepy. So we'll just wait here while you limp on back from that.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today.
at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back. So back on the side of the road, James tries to console Isabella by assuring her that Isaiah and Margot are an almost couple who can never actually be together because that would ruin the magic of them wanting each other. But she doesn't seem too comfortable by the thought of just accepting the guy she likes has feelings he can never resolve for someone else for some reason. Isabella's so picky. This is like a really brief scene, but it's really funny. Just to get more James and just his whole outlook on the on the situation, his description of us funny and contained a phrase I was not expecting to be in this episode. And then Isabel's like, is that a sexual thing? And he's like, well, yeah. So, like, okay, all right, fun times. But again, James is a delight throughout the whole show.
Absolutely.
Then we see Lucas, Margo, and Isaiah reaching the cabin and finding Nora's car. And then they head off into the woods looking for her. Biddlebrat nearly captures Nora, but she manages to fight free. James and Isabella are surprised by Victoria, Ben, Eliza, and Sarah arriving. Eliza verifies James isn't an evil dupe thanks to recognizing his snark, which I thought was a really nice moment. And then The kids say they know about Slappy, and the whole group heads towards the cabin. So we finally have all the parents united together. I guess we did get to see them convincing Victoria. It all happened off screen, but I'm glad we didn't have to deal with that. But at least she's on board and is helping. We didn't get to see them recruiting Sarah either, but they're all there. So finally.
Yeah, certainly fine. Basically all of this stuff that we got a bit of and that we're going to get again of like Nora and Biddle in the snow. He's like yelling her name. And I was like, does he think she's going to answer? Like, what are you doing? What are you doing yelling? Like, she's hiding from you. You don't have to yell for her. If anything, you should stop yelling and you might hear her walking on the crunchy snow. Like, I was like, dude, like it's 100% just being done because it's more scary that way.
Oh yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah. It's very the unhinged killer. Almost like The Shining, like Jack Torrance in The Shining, just like yelling and screaming for Wendy as he's hunting her down through the overlook. You know, if he was quiet, he could sneak up on her and get her, but that's not what's happening. Biddlebrat is completely out of his mind at this point and is not thinking clearly. Because like you said, like he's yelling and yelling and yelling, and then he stops yelling, and then she moves, and then he almost gets her. So right. It's almost like he was lulling her into a false sense of security at that point, but I don't think he was thinking that far ahead. It's more just coincidental. But yeah, I did have the thoughts. He's just yelling for her. I'm like, dude, she's not going to say anything. You're just letting her know where you are. He does learn his lesson, though, and turns things around on her in this scene or two.
Also, all these people just kind of like wandering into the woods and this like, making their way without trails markings or like anything like that. This is 100% just a recipe for like someone needing to call search and rescue. Like there's such a like instinctual part of me that's like, this is not good. No, you can't do this. You are going to get lost. Like this is why you stay on marked trails. You let someone know where you're going. Like you bring all of your essentials with you. This is not good. As someone who has had to call search and rescue because a person that I was snowshoeing with got injured on a hike and like could not hike way out. Like, yeah, we like had to get helicoptered out and everything. It was like a whole big thing. Search and rescue is incredible. And they're all like volunteers and they just do, and they're like, they're very big advocates that like search and rescue should not cost money because basically they want people to call search and rescue if they need them. They don't want them to try to hike out first to save money because that will just get them more lost and like less likely to be found. So anyway, we ended up doing a whole bunch of like writing to newspapers and stuff after that because like they're incredible. And like our story got covered on the news and they were like, oh yeah, they were like well prepared and did everything right, but like accidents happen and whatever. And it was very funny because people watching the news were like, wait, isn't that, we know them. And it was like, so I was like still in the helicopter, like heading to the hospital where my friend was being dropped off and getting phone calls from people being like, are you getting rescued off a mountain right now? What is happening?
That's so amazing.
Yeah. And then I had to call my friend's mom and I had to call and be like, so he's fine, but like also, you should come, he's fine, but you should come to the hospital. He's fine, but like, he injured his knee. He's fine. one of the like scariest phone calls I've had to make of just like, how do I not stress out this mother more than she might already be right now, but also let her know that her son injured his knee and is being taken to the hospital. Anyway, so that's all I thought about during the scene, where I was like, search and rescue is not going to be able to find you guys. This is bad.
Yeah. I did want to say again, like Eliza, like seeing James or something, I'm like, are you James? And he's like, are you drunk already? He's like, I recognize that snark. Just like,
Yeah. Again, I loved how quickly she knew the other one wasn't him. And then so the opposite here was pretty great. Yeah. I was like, yeah. Even if she's not always a great mom, she's like, at least she didn't get fooled by that. Because that always bothers me when I'm like, don't you know your kid? Come on.
Yeah. Nora hears Lucas calling for her and she follows his voice. Only to discover it's actually Biddle Brat doing a terrific Lucas impression. He starts giggling creepily and chasing after her. And he catches her and pushes her down to a hole, knocking her out. He gets Slappy's head out of the duffel bag, replaces the eye, and removes the tape from his mouth, and Slappy says, hello, old friend.
Yeah, that was all intense. First of all, I was like, what is this point? Like, how is she? But yeah, you're right. It does sound like Lucas. But I was like, how is he doing that? Like, how do you not think that this is probably Biddle somehow? But I guess it just did sound like Lucas. So I don't
know. It was definitely Lucas's voice initially. And I guess she has thoughts that her son has already been involved in the supernatural stuff. So maybe she, you know, jumping to that conclusion. But yeah, it feels weird, but she doesn't necessarily know all of Biddle's abilities, so I'll give her a pass. And, you know, there was a possibility it was Lucas, because Lucas was in the woods looking for her, so it could have been. It just wasn't. And again, Justin Long giggling creepily as he approaches her is just, like, chef's kiss. Just so good. I was just so impressed by the scene. Isaiah gets separated from Lucas and Margo and falls, winding up hanging onto the side of a cliff. They look for him, but find the unconscious Nora instead, who turns out to be okay. Lucas says they have to stop Biddle and tells her if they get out of this, they should have no more secrets. Isaiah manages to climb up the cliffside by himself. As he reaches the top, he encounters Slappy and Biddle Brat. And it's just like a really great thing as he comes to the edge and they're Slappy is just sitting there like, hi! Like,
ah. Yeah. I didn't understand how he was able to climb like that with a broken arm still. But you know, I guess the like adrenaline of lifting a car off a baby type situation, I guess, but
yeah. I mean, he's an athlete, but yeah, I have the same thought, like, okay, the broken arm and all, I don't know. It's also hard to tell like how much time has actually passed in the show since he broke the arm, you know, it's been some time, not a ton of time. I don't know. But yeah, it did seem a little bit, but yeah, I think the adrenaline is the big excuse there.
Yeah, so fine.
Biddle Brat taunts Isaiah and prepares to smash him with a rock, but Lucas tackles him. Nora tries to get through to the Good and Harold while Slappy continues to play devil on his shoulder. Margo tells him they talked to his parents. When he says they're dead, Nora replies, so are you. He turns to attack Isaiah again, but hesitates when Margo calls him Hair Bear. His face starts to shift back and forth between Nathan and Harold as everyone else finally arrives. The parents apologize for what happened back in the day, saying they were actually trying to save him. He asks Margo why she said Hair Bear, and she gives him the message from his parents. Slappy tells him he can't trust them, encourages him to finish them off just like he did his parents. And this was the wrong move, as Biddle Brat pulls Isaiah up to solid ground and then throws Slappy off the cliff, saying he didn't kill his parents, Slappy did.
Yeah, this was all kind of intense.
Yeah, a lot happened in there too. I was not expecting this to kind of have this be like Slappy getting thrown off the cliff. Was not expecting us to have that moment here. And the next scene even more so. But this, like you kind of said, this episode feels like it should have been the season finale in a lot of ways. As they are wrapping up the storylines.
I think I sort of expected this to be, this confrontation to be a situation where I was expecting Biddle to like grab Slappy and like get away. So that this would be like the start of him maybe like questioning Slappy. That seed has now been planted. Let that fester. But him be like, okay, fine. Like there's too many of you. I'm not going to try to do anything. I'm just going to like, now I've got Slappy, which is what I really want. And we're going to go do Slappy's evil plan. And you have to like now stop that for the last two episodes. But so this, I was like, oh, wow. So like Slappy's over the cliff. Biddle's moved on. Everybody, all the secrets are out in the open. Everybody's talking to each other. I'm like, okay, great. Like, we're all done. until the very end that I was like, now I don't really know what's going to happen in the last two episodes anymore. I'm very confused.
Yeah. Which I mean, it's kind of a cool place to be a little bit. Yeah, I was like, I have no idea where it's going, but it's also very surprising. But to finish out the episode, after throwing something off the cliff, smoke begins to pour out of Nathan's body and it forms into the charred version of Harold. He then walks up to Sarah and she kind of reaches out to touch his hand. And then the charred layers start to flake off of him, leaving the vision of an unharmed Harold. His parents ghost appear and he goes to hug them and all three disappear in like a little burst of light. Nathan comes to his own in his own body, a bit confused and wobbly legged. The parents all look over the cliffside and Nora says it's finally all over. And Nora, why'd you have to say that? Don't you know the rules? You never say that in a horror movie. It's just like summoning something else to come. Yep. Victoria apologizes, which I should have put in bold in my notes because Victoria actually apologized for something. Yeah. Ben says, you know, it's over because of you. They all are, you know, giving Nora props for being the only one willing to, you know, stick to her guns and not hide her head in the sand. But then we pan to the bottom of the cliff and we pan over Slappy all in pieces again. But then his eyes pop open as the credits roll. And that's the end of the episode, letting us know that it's not quite over yet, Nora.
Yeah, did you watch the preview for like the what's happening on the rest of?
Yeah, because it started playing like almost immediately. I was like, oh, there's a little bit more. Oh, wait, no, this is the next on. And previous, next time on. So yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to talk much about that, but.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll save it for our like predictions for the next episode section. And then people can skip over it if they like really don't want to be spoiled by it. But yeah, this like the eyes opening at the end, I was like, of course, damn it. Like, this is why we can't have nice things. We can't just like wrap this all up in this tiny little bow. The stupid, creepy puppet has to still be alive somehow at the bottom of this cliff, and he's gonna come and do evil stuff, and I don't like it.
Yeah. So one thing I liked about this, I liked The smoke pouring out of Nathan was cool because like the reverse of what we saw when he first got possessed, and then seeing the charred of Harold and then like just kind of like flaking off him the pure version of Harold underneath. I thought that was like kind of a neat thing. So I really liked that. I liked Victoria apologizing. It's a long time coming. But again, Nora saying it's all finally over. Like, Nora, no, you're supposed to be the one that sees things other people don't see. You're supposed to be the one who knows what's going on. You should know the evil is still out there. Just because you threw Slappy off a cliff does not mean that Slappy is gone.
Yeah, absolutely. Clearly, there's things at work here. Obviously, we will get there. But it was sort of an interesting way of telling this story, at least, that so much of our the questions that we had and everything that we had sort of talked about. And it was funny when we were like trying to map out the rest of this show, when we were making predictions in previous episodes, a lot of that has happened now. Like, we're done, we solved a lot of the questions that we had, and so now it's like, okay, so now the remaining questions seem to be like, what is Slappy's goal here, and how do you like ultimately defeat Slappy? So TBD on that, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe a bit of this like little love foursome thing that I don't actually care about, but I imagine we will get more of that as well.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we'll see that, because it's basically going to be like a okay, the evil's over. Now we can get back to our own lives. And what does that look like for these kids who, in some ways, were only drawn together because of the danger? And what does that, you know, what does happens after all of that is over? You know, because they weren't necessarily all friends before this. So are they going to stay friends after this or not?
Yeah, there's sort of that bit, right, where they're all like kind of making their like confessions when they think they're about to die or whatever. I think it's like Isabella's like, oh, yeah, like I love you guys. I'm so sorry I tortured you. And I was like, you all like only became friends like 2 weeks ago. Like, I mean, I guess they've been bonded very quickly through this like shared trauma.
I mean, James says they're all his best friends. So,
oh, yeah.
Which I felt like, okay, that feels very sudden, James. Also, it feels very James to just tell people that they're his best friends, even if they're not. You know, that's what they want to hear in the moment, right? And of course, Lucas's confession, which we didn't much, is that he used one of her dad's washcloths as toilet paper. It's just also a very Lucas thing. And Margo's just like, I've been very lucky. That's her confession, that she's had the very lucky life. Like, okay, I guess you can recognize your privilege. Good on you, Margo.
Yeah, good job.
It was like a very strange set of confessions, a very strange set of like deathbed confessions from most of them.
Yeah. Yeah, we did get told off by Brenna in the Discord that three towels was perfectly reasonable, one for the body, one for the hair, and one as a washcloth. So I can see it. I can understand.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know if Lucas needs a whole hair towel though, as I'm thinking about this.
Yeah, probably not. Apparently he didn't really need a washcloth either, or maybe he needed something else other than
maybe
the washcloth.
More washcloths.
Man. All right. That was probably the scariest thing in the episode to me, was that whole comment. But speaking of being scared, this episode was called You Can't Scare Me, and it was based on a book in the series called You Can't Scare Me. And I did read the book, and the plot has absolutely zero to do with anything that happened in this actual episode. They took the title because they liked the title. The actual book is about this kid who is on a trip and gets scared by like some wildlife in the woods, and this brown nosing girl in the class makes fun of him, and so they tried to scare her, but she is like basically unable to be scared. She's super brave, and everything's happened. Even if something she's scared of, she confronts it because she doesn't want to run from her fears. And so this kid and his friends are always trying to scare her, and they can't scare her, and it just, they get more and more frustrated because every time they try to scare her, it backfires and they wind up looking stupid and she looks like a hero. So they finally find out that she's kind of scared about this local legend about these mud men. And so they decide to fake these mud men. And surprise, surprise, the mud men are actually real. And, you know, so I enjoyed it. It was one of the better ones I read. But just, again, absolutely nothing to do with anything that happened in this episode. In fact, you just had Nora saying the line, "You can't scare me," once in the episode, I guess, to justify it. But she was lying through her teeth there.
Yeah, there we go. Has anyone ever tried to like go out of their way to scare you, Todd, because you're so like a veteran of this medium?
I will get like startled for sure. So I was actually telling the story the other day. On Halloween, there's a movie called Trick or Treat that I always watch. It's like my annual trick movie to watch to close out my horror movie viewing on Halloween. Well, the first time I saw it years and years ago, I had a roommate at the time. And so I was watching the movie and he was back in his bedroom talking to his future wife, long distance thing. And so they were talking on the phones, like a weekly like date type thing, I think. And so, but I was prepared for him to come out and try to scare me, because I knew he was going to think that he could like come and scare me in the middle of this horror movie. And he never did. I was tense the entire time. He never did. So then the movie was over. And then I started watching something like Grey's Anatomy or something like that. And about 20 minutes into this episode of this drama, he pops up from behind the couch like, rah! Just like startled the crap out of me. So that sort of thing. I mean, it was a big like jump and scare people is definitely a thing. One of my best friends loved to like hide and jump out and scare me. So that type of thing, I will get startled and scared like in the instant like that. but it passes really quickly and then is replaced by either embarrassment or anger or both. But it's like, but yeah, that's the sort of stuff that happens more than anything else.
Gotcha. That's very funny. Cool. Yeah, thanks. We've got books for the next two episodes as well, right?
Kind of, sort of. So we definitely have books for the next episode. The one after that, sort of, kind of. And we'll talk
you
about
said
that
it's
more.
It's a series, right?
Week. It's a series. I did find out there is a book that relates to that title, but it's not like a narrative book. It's more like a book about facts about the series type thing. So it's a thing that people could get like facts about the monsters and stuff like that. So it's not an actual narrative thing. So I have not read that, but I did read a book that is related to the title.
Cool. Sweet. I'm excited. So yeah, what do we, have you read the Night of the Living Dummy part two?
Yes, Night of the Living Dummy 2. I have read that one. So that is our next episode is Night of the Living Dummy 2. So it is the return of Slappy. And, you know, I kind of mentioned before, like the first book, Slappy was not the main antagonist, but the second book, Slappy is the main antagonist. Okay. So as if we didn't have enough proof from the end of this episode with Slappy opening his eyes, the next episode is definitely going to be Slappy centric somehow, but exactly how, who knows?
Yeah, so my question for you before I start like wildly guessing about what the next episode could be is, do you think the book will have any similarity to the next episode of the show other than the fact that it's Slappy centric? Because I'm thinking like Slappy clearly has this like other plan. Do you think that like that is in all any way related to what you read the book?
No, I don't think okay. so. Because I feel like the plan of Slappy in the book is very small scale plan. Mm. And this does not feel like this feels like later books level of plans from Slappy, not the initial trilogy. And while I've read the initial trilogy, Slappy is very much just this little ventriloquist dummy who does things to the people who had the misfortune of owning him. And then later on in the series, whenever he starts developing more magical powers and doing bigger and grander things.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So this is basically, I'm thinking like clearly Slappy. And if anyone didn't watch the little like preview of like what's on for the rest of the next two episodes, basically, you know, feel free to skip a little bit here, but we're thinking somebody arrives at Slappy and he has a line of like, oh, I like took you long enough to get here or whatever. Do you have a guess as to who this is? Because I'm like, my main thought is that it's Brat and that somehow he is like not actually a good guy, even when he's not like possessed by Biddle, or that he is, there's something about him that like liked the like power that he had with Slappy or something. Because the only other person from this show that we know that I feel like it could be is Margot's dad, which doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I'm like, yeah, I'm just trying to think of like who else we even know at this point that could be, because there's no way they're introducing a brand new character two episodes in. So do you have other thoughts on that, Todd? Because I think we're safe to like both speculate here.
Yeah, I have zero clue, because whenever I saw that in the preview, my head went through all the permutations and none of them make any sense to me. Like mm-hmm. none of the people that we know, like, it doesn't make sense for any of the kids to do it. It doesn't make sense for any of the parents to do it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me for Brat to do it, even though I agree Brat makes the most sense out of the people, just so we know the least about him because he's in a transitional phase in his life. But if he really was like in league with Slappy, then I don't know how one the world was going on there. The only thing it could be, there could still be another James Dupe out there. We could still have one more James Dupe. That's like the one thing, because we know like the Dupe that tried to attack Ben and Eliza, the reference Slappy. No, he wasn't referencing Harold. He's like, you never should have done that to Slappy. And so I feel like there is a possibility that there could be one more James Dupe out there in the wild, because we don't really know how many there were. We don't have like a good count, and we feel like, yeah, the last one that got splatted was probably the last one, but maybe not. So honestly, I think that's the thing that makes the most sense to me, it being like the final James Dupe that didn't get splatted. that would make more sense than anything else, because none of the other characters really make sense to me. Sarah, possibly, because there's still some like shady stuff about her. We still don't know like the full story of why she wanted to move. We've made speculation and stuff, but she had like a whole box full of memorabilia and stuff, which could have just been like her, you know, feeling guilty about everything. But she's the only one of the parents that I feel like there's enough mystery around, but I still don't see her doing it, because I still feel like none of them would want to be, because they all were very anti-slappy. So I don't see her doing it. I don't see this all being a long con with her. For me, James Dupe is the only thing that really makes sense, but they could surprise us.
Yeah, James Dupe definitely is not something that I had thought of, but to me is clearly the leading. To me, this is like who's the troll all over again, where I'm like, I don't know, it could be Margaret. And you're like, no, it's like, very obviously. Right, of course. So this feels like, again, Todd watches these kinds of shows. I do not. He's much better at these predictions than I am. That makes a lot of sense to me. And then I was thinking about like what Slappy's like ultimate goal here is. We sort of saw, it seemed sort of like kind of fire, like ritualistic something. Is he just trying to turn the world into puppets, or do you think that there's something else going on there?
I feel like that's part of it, because we also had the vision in the scrapbook that Isabella said felt like the future, which is an auditorium full of puppet people.
Yeah.
So, and I will say the thing that was consistent in the first two Night of Living Dummy books was the puppets' main goal was to make the people who brought them to life their slaves. That was their whole thing. It was basically, you're going to be my slave now. So Slappy wanting to enslave everybody by turning them into puppets, making them his slaves. That makes sense. What turning people into puppets and what the burning structure with people screaming have to do with each other, I'm not sure. I have a small guess based on the final book and the series that was related to it, to the whole horror land of it all. But I don't want to speculate too much because it gets into like book stuff. I still, again, it doesn't help that I couldn't really make out what was happening in that one vision of the fiery thing. You know, it was something on fire, people screaming, and it felt like a structure that was on fire with people inside, maybe. So yeah, I'm still very unsure of what Slappy's goals are. I'm guessing that we'll find out next episode.
Yeah, it's interesting. It feels notable to me that like Biddle's parents tried to burn Slappy in the fireplace and couldn't do it. So, and like Biddle's whole thing with fire, like that has been a bit consistent here. So is Slappy's goal going to involve like all of the kids are going to get like trapped in a house and he's going to like try to burn it down or something. But somehow it seems like he is somehow both immune to fire, but can also maybe like wield fire as well in some of this, like with the like creepy face that we saw when Biddle died in the fire. Like, I don't totally understand if that was Slappy or if that was supposed to be Biddle at the time. I sort of like have a lot of questions around that, but Slappy's going to get found and put back together and is going to start to like enact his evil plan. And I think he's going to start turning people into puppets, but that all seems like a pretty safe bet after seeing the preview. So I don't really have anything too wildly predictive to make beyond that. So do you have some, sorry.
So have some horror recommendations here.
Yeah.
This one, the thing that my brain went to watching this episode was just kind of like snowbound horror, like horror taking place in places where people are kind of snowed in or having to deal with like the elements a bit. So, and there are plenty of those. I'm not going to talk about any of the really Christmas themed horror movies, because there's tons of those as well. But some of the ones that I thought about, one that I just watched not too long ago again, called Frostbitten, or Frostbite. It's a Swedish vampire movie. It takes place in Sweden and during the winter. A bunch of kids, this kid swipes some drugs that turn out to be something from someone who's experimenting on a vampire. And so they take the drugs and turn into a vampire, and pretty soon all the kids are turning into vampires. It's a horror comedy. It was really enjoyed that one. I would recommend that if you can find it. Another Swedish vampire movie that I highly recommend is called Let the Right One In. It is excellent. There was an American remake, which is actually pretty good as well. The novel it's based on is really, really good. I feel like that's one that a lot of people probably have seen or at least heard of, but I highly recommend Let the Right One In. It's some nice wintry horror. Misery, there's not a lot that happens in the snow. Most of it's confined to the house, but the inciting incident that leads to the real horror happens in the snow, and the snow is kind of the reason why things happen. Misery is a great movie. Highly recommend that one. A movie that I just rewatched recently, because I saw it years ago and really liked it and was like, I should rewatch that. It's called Wind Chill. It's like from 2007, about these couple of college students who are doing a rideshare home for the holidays, and they take a detour and crash in the woods, and some really spooky supernatural stuff starts happening to them. And one of the main reasons why I'm recommending it, other than really enjoying it, is whenever I rewatched it, I went, holy crap, that's Emily Blunt. Emily Blunt is like the main character in this. This is the first movie I ever saw Emily Blunt in. This is like before she became big in the States. So if you want to see like an early Emily Blunt horror role, A Wind Chill is a movie to check out. And then last, but most definitely not least, is what is quite possibly my favorite horror movie of all time, John Carpenter's The Thing. It's one of my favorite movies. It's about an Antarctic research group who discover something in the snow, and this something can change shape, and then they're not sure which one of them is really them and which one of them is this thing pretending to be them. It's kind of like this locked room, like they're all stuck in this location in Antarctica, not able to get out because of the elements, and they can't trust anybody. It's claustrophobic, paranoid. And also has some amazing practical effects as the creature changes shape and does all sorts of really weird, gross body horror stuff at times as well. Again, one of my all-time favorite movies, period, and possibly my favorite horror movie, and highly recommend that everyone see John Carpenter's The Thing.
Well, there you go. That is awesome. Thanks, Todd. Where can people check you out? What else are you talking about on the interwebs?
You can find me over at One Indescribable Podcast, where every week TV Lindy, Adam H., and I talk about Girls 5 Eva. So we've been going along on that pretty well. It's been a fun time. You can also find that on Twitter at 16G Podcast. You can find me on most social media platforms at Librarian Todd, because Todd Librarian with too many characters. And I should have another announcement about another Post-Show Recaps show pretty soon that I'll be covering.
Ooh, that's exciting. Follow me on Twitter, MelissaW28, MelissaWoodward28 on other social media. I'm currently also talking lessons in chemistry with Dr. Amanda, which has been super interesting. I think we're going to get into some baking and cooking based on the show, which will be fun. Talking Dimension 20 with Rich. This season of this D&D actual play show that we're covering on Dropout TV, the first episode's available for free on YouTube, you can check it out, has been described as Watership Down meets body horror. So it feels very appropriate for me to share it with the audience of this podcast. There's been some very strange stuff happening in it, and I think that people are... I think that there's more to come. I think Abria has some things up her sleeves that she's still gonna subject the rest of us to. So it should be great. Otherwise, talking Doctor Who, and gosh, yeah, I think that is it right now. I was on Girls 5 Eva. It was a really great time. Or on One Indescribable Podcast, talking Girls 5 Eva. And otherwise, you can find us here next week talking Episode 9, Night of the Living Dummy. Part 2. We will see you then in November, but we're still talking spooky stuff. Bye, everybody.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.